Hey everybody, Rob Mauer here. Welcome back to Tesla Daily. Today we're talking about some new drone flyover videos from Giga Shanghai, potentially giving us some hints at Tesla's production rates. We of course also had Tesla drop FSD Beta 10.8, as well as the Holiday Version 11 software update over the weekend. Also got some news on Giga Berlin, Model X, and a couple other things as well. Pretty good start to the day for Tesla stock today, finishing up 2.5% to $1,093.94, though it did give up some of the gains for the day in the last hour or so of trading. Kind of converse to what the NASDAQ was doing towards the end of the day, so kind of interesting there. NASDAQ ended up finishing up 1.4%. With that divergence towards the end of the day, I do kind of wonder if that marked Elon selling. Again, we should still have one more lot of that. We haven't seen any Form 4s from Friday. It's still possible that those could come out today, but it has seemed like more often than not, those Form 4s have been posted the same day as the sale. But either way, we'll have to keep an eye out for those tonight to see if that is finally wrapped up. All right, first up today, I want to spend some time going through a couple new drone videos from Wuwa of Giga Shanghai. He was asked to take some videos of finished vehicles leaving the factory with the hopes that then a production rate could be extrapolated from the rate of those vehicles leaving. So he did that. He made two videos, one for the Model Y and one for the Model 3. The Model Y video is actually two segments. So the first is a 10-minute segment of vehicles leaving. The second is 5 minutes. If you count the number of cars in that first 10-minute segment, it comes out to 38 seconds per car. And if you count it in the second segment, 44 seconds per car. The Model 3 video ends up being very similar. Again, that's 10 minutes, and that also ends up being 44 seconds per car. Now, before we go any further with that, of course, it is worth noting that these, relative to an entire day, are very, very short clips. It's possible these could be good proxies for Tesla's production rate, but for many, many reasons, it's also possible that they could be terrible proxies. So I definitely think it's worth spending a few minutes thinking about alongside other context that we have, but just keep that in mind that this may not be all that valuable of information. Now, that being said, if Tesla were actually able to consistently produce a car every 38 seconds, that would be about 2,275 per day. If they were able to do one every 44 seconds, like they do in a couple of segments here, that would be about 1,950 per day. Obviously, those both extrapolate to extremely high production rates over the course of a year. That'd be 700,000 to 800,000 vehicles per year if there were no downtime at all. And just to be clear, especially for those listening to audio only, the Model 3 and the Model Y are exiting different areas of the factory, so you'd be talking 700,000, 800,000 per vehicle, not combined. Obviously, based on October and November production rates of 55,000, 60,000 vehicles per month, Tesla's not at these levels of production. But I still think there is possibly still some value here if we look at this as potentially demonstrative of a peak production rate for Tesla. Remember, about a month ago, we had heard a rumor from a different Giga Shanghai drone video producer that Tesla could produce more than 1,600 Model Y per day and more than 2,000 Model 3 per day. Those numbers aren't really that far off of what we're getting from extrapolating these short 10-minute segments. Now, back when we heard that rumor, that was so far and above Tesla's current production rate that obviously we assumed, if true, that was representing a peak production rate. And maybe these videos give us a little shred of evidence to help move towards validating that idea. Just as a thought exercise, let's say, okay, that 44 second rate that we saw for both the Model Y and the Model 3, let's say that's the peak, that's 1,950 per day, but you also have some hours in each day that are not going to be fully operational. You have lunch, you have shift changeover. So maybe ideal state, Tesla could actually keep up that peak rate for 90% of the day. Then you're at 3,500 cars per day, which is actually pretty close to what that rumor from November was. If Tesla was able to sustain a daily rate like that, and then we add in 4 weeks of downtime for the year, 1 week per quarter, that would yield an annualized production rate of 1.1 million vehicles per year. I think a number like that is actually pretty plausible. Maybe you take a little bit more off because that's assuming things go pretty much perfectly. So maybe drop another 10% for inefficiencies, call it a million per year. I would not be at all surprised if that's the kind of production capability that Tesla has at Shanghai right now. Obviously, we're doing a lot of extrapolating on a very small piece of data right here. But again, I think if we bring in some of that other context, it's helpful and relatively plausible. The last thing that I'll add to this is that if we go back to October, remember, we did have that week of downtime, first week of October. Tesla still produced 55,000 vehicles that month. And if we had taken out that downtime, that suggested capability for 70,000 vehicles that month. Obviously, November didn't live up to that, but again, I've heard that that was supply chain constrained. And rounding this out to that million vehicles per year number, on a monthly basis, that's 83,000, which really isn't that far off the rate Tesla was hitting in October. Wrapping all this up then, my hunch based on kind of all of this information in combination is that we're seeing the potential of Shanghai being reduced right now, being hidden, and I believe that's primarily a result of supply constraints. So who knows how long those supply constraints are going to continue, but if those were lifted, I think there's the potential to see a pretty sudden and significant increase in Shanghai's production rate. All right, I know a lot of extrapolating there. Let's move on to something a little bit more tangible. Over the last few days, Tesla has released both Tesla FSD Beta 10.8 and Software Version 11, which has carried a new user interface, particularly for the Model 3 and the Model Y. We talked a lot about those features last week. I just want to comment a little bit on what I've been seeing in terms of reaction to this and just share some of my initial early thoughts as well. All right, so first up on FSD Beta 10.8, I haven't had a chance to do a video yet. With so many more people getting access, let me know if that's even something you guys are still interested in me doing. This version in particular seemed to bring in a lot of new testers. I think Tesla expanding pretty significantly with this version, which I'm excited to see. Obviously, the beta still has plenty of faults, but I think it is to the point where it is starting to add some utility, so I'm glad more people are getting to experience that utility. And so far for me, 10.8 has been pretty good. It's tough to compare to the previous versions, as right now I'm in Iowa, usually in Milwaukee. And even though I haven't had a chance to do a video, I have spent a fair amount of time driving it, and I have noticed improvements even from driving around 10.6 here earlier on my trip back. One specific example is that previously when turning onto country roads, kind of highway situation, in previous versions, pretty much every single time I was in that situation, it would say high speed cross traffic detected, use accelerator to continue. That's fine, it's not a huge deal, but when trying to show friends or family and seeing if we can do a zero intervention drive or something like that, and that happens almost immediately, kind of a bummer. But with 10.8, it's been handling those situations very well without having to request confirmation. I think that's only happened once since I had 10.8 in a very dark situation. Aside from that, it obviously hasn't been perfect for me, but has been solid. I was able to take a half an hour drive from my parents' house all the way to my brother's house, which was a mix of pretty much everything from city to highway to interstate to suburb, and it was pretty impressive. It was zero intervention at all, except for one sort of country road where the speed limit was marked as 25 and it was actually 50. So I had to use the scroll wheel to increase the speed a bit, but that was the only interaction in a 30-minute drive. Driveway to driveway, stopped right in front of my brother's driveway, and I was actually taking my mom there. And she kind of complained that it didn't pull into the driveway after we just did this amazing 30-minute, completely autonomous drive. Unexpectedly tough crowd, but I was impressed at least. Anyway, overall good experience with 10.8 so far. I really like the new visualization. Full screen is pretty cool, and I'm anxious to try it out in Milwaukee as well. As for the new user interface, Software Version 11, definitely seeing a lot of mixed reactions out there. I think anytime you have a significant user interface change, there's going to be things that people like, things that people don't like. I think this is no different. And that also applies to me as well. I think the biggest complaint that I've seen out there is that things that used to take one tap previously now take two or more. I think that's definitely a valid complaint for me. Seat heat is now annoying to get to, and I use that a lot being in cold climate. Tesla's obviously added the automatic seat heat functionality, which I haven't had a chance to test yet. But I think in general, there's a logic like that behind some of these choices from Tesla. And then I would say there is the element of customization in this UI. I think right now the value added from that customization is relatively low, but hopefully over time, Tesla can add some more things into the customization options. So right now, I think it's just a little bit early to make a call on whether this is an improvement or a step back in user interface, user experience. Personally, I fall into the mixed feelings camp, but mostly into the it's too early to tell camp. And there could be things that Tesla has in mind that we don't know about that plays into the UI design here. For example, Elon responded to a tweet on Friday asking for Roblox to be added to the entertainment app, and Elon just replying saying a lot will be added. So keep that in mind. Tesla kind of knows where it's going better than we do, and this UI might fit better for some of those future plans, or maybe not, but at least worth the benefit of the doubt this early. While we're on the topic of display-related things, I saw an interesting tweet from Greenly Only a few days ago that suggested that Tesla, before seeming to agree with NHTSA that they would just make the games not playable while driving, had originally planned to make it so that passengers would have to adjust the passenger seat controls before allowing passengers to play games. Now, obviously, with the NHTSA stuff, it doesn't seem like that's what's going to happen, but I thought that was kind of clever. But I have been thinking a little bit more about this, and I really don't mind that they're disabling it entirely, even with a passenger. I think even if the passenger is playing, there's still potential there for it to distract the driver, just because the driver might be curious to see what's going on in the game rather than what's going on the road. So I think that's fine. I do still lean a little bit towards it being overregulation. And again, I think with FSD beta, the eye tracking there solves this, but whatever, not really a huge deal either way. All right, next up, we've got an update on the Model X. Of course, Tesla had started production of the long range version earlier this quarter. Looks like they're now starting to deliver the Plaid Model X's as well. A few reports of that over the last few days. But finally now, the refresh is completed with that final variant being delivered, as long as we forget about the Plaid Plus, which of course Tesla no longer intends to make, but exciting to see now this finally wrap up and 2022 can be a year where all these vehicles hopefully are in volume production. All right, next up here, just a small update on Giga Berlin. This was noticed by Alex Voigt on Twitter, who saw a LinkedIn post from a new Tesla employee who says that they can finally share that they'll be joining the Tesla battery cell manufacturing team at Giga Berlin starting in January. Personally, I don't view this as huge news. It doesn't mean that there weren't people working on this prior to January, but at least it does give us a little bit of confirmation that by January for sure, they will be. All right, then last couple of quick things for today. First, just a really small Megapack story, but kind of exciting nonetheless because this is about a Megapack project in Hungary, a location I don't recall having heard too much about in regard to Tesla energy. Anyway, it's been reported that Swiss-based energy company MET Group will be installing an 8 megawatt-hour Tesla Megapack in central Hungary to be completed in summer of 2022. So obviously, for the scale of Tesla, a small project, but something that can offer proof of concept for bigger projects in the future. Lastly today then, just some new information in a frequently made argument against electric vehicles, that being the long tailpipe argument, which tries to state that while electric vehicles may be cleaner in terms of their use case emissions, the manufacturing process causes more emissions than an internal combustion engine vehicle would, and therefore EVs aren't actually any cleaner. Now, over the years, this has been refuted many, many times, but Yale University out with a new study on this as well. The conclusion from the study lead was that, quote, "The elephant in the room is the supply chain of the fossil fuel powered vehicles, not that of electric vehicles," end quote. And one of their researchers also added, quote, "The surprising element was how much lower the emissions of electric vehicles were. The supply chain for combustion vehicles is just so dirty that electric vehicles can't surpass them, even when you factor in indirect emissions," end quote. One of Yale's professors also commented, quote, "So if we priced the carbon embodied in these processes, the expectation is electric vehicles would be exorbitantly expensive. It turns out that's not the case. If you level the playing field by also pricing the carbon in the fossil fuel vehicle supply chain, electric vehicle sales would actually increase," end quote. Now, obviously, we know EVs are supply constrained, but his point there is just that the relative value of an EV versus an internal combustion engine vehicle would be even more compelling if carbon were taxed. So, not new information for many of you here, but another study out there that you can cite if you do get into one of those long tailpipe conversations. All right, that'll wrap it up for today then. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And I'll see you tomorrow for the Tuesday, December 28th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.